Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much for the invitation to come and spend a few minutes here. Just really talking from my perspective as a director of nursing, what do I do in an organisation that has 1,000 beds, 8,000 staff, delivers services from 17 different sites? What systems and processes can I put in place that gives me some confidence that standards of care and patient safety is being monitored? And how do I assure myself and how do I reassure the board when I go to the formal board meetings and in between that? And I would say, you know, it isn't easy, and I think one of the opportunities for today is to share ideas and good practice, because times are difficult, as we've heard, and it's ever even more important now to put in those systems that will help you track and monitor when decisions are made. And we know that there will be, we'll all be making some difficult decisions as we go along in the next few years, because things cannot stand still, as we've heard. And we need to be very careful that any decisions that we do make are based with the best information that we've got around, and also that there are tracking systems in place to alert us to things where we might need to have to stop and think and pause and reconsider what's gone before. But I think if there's only one slide that I was going to say, is that no system or process is perfect. They are helpful and useful. They help to provide a framework within which people can organise their work and their information, but they are not the ultimate tool that will mean that nothing bad ever happens in your organisation. So I think it's really important that you learn from other people and you constantly review your systems and processes and make those refinements so that they continue to be fit for purpose for what you need them to do. And I think the other thing for me to say would here at this point would be say that no person working within that system or process is perfect also. So it's very important that we do make sure that those staff understand the systems and the processes that they're working in and know what to do if they don't think that they're working well. Because we're all very familiar with this model, which was first, introduced to the NHS, I think it was in about 2005, so it's some years old now, but it's a very simple example of what happens when your systems and processes and all the checks and measures that you try and put in the system to prevent service failure or individual failure happens when all of those holes in that Swiss cheese line up and the incident happens at the end, despite all best efforts. And I guess, you know, I work in an organisation where we do have, as I'm sure you all do, serious incidents, but it's how you take those learnings from those and make sure that you learn and make things stronger and more robust as you go forward. I think it was Peter this morning who talked about Lord Darcy and the three domains of quality. And I like this again. I'm into very simple diagrams. This is a very simple illustration of what quality means. And I took this from, I think it was one of the CNO documents that was published a couple of years ago, the Roadmap to Quality, which is full of tools and techniques that nurses can consider about what sorts of methodologies they might be able to put in place that would be useful for them to help them to monitor and track quality and safety in the patient experience, either at organisational level or at individual ward or service level. So really the three key questions that a patient sort of asks as they're sort of entering a service, be that in the community or in hospital, will I be safe? You know, how will I be protected from healthcare infections? What will my experience be like? And we heard today, whilst the majority may be satisfied, but there's also a large cohort of patients who are not satisfied. And some do speak up and give us feedback about what wasn't right, and that's good because we can learn. But many use our services and go back home again or go back into a different part of the service or the social care system, and they never say, and they've had a really bad experience. So what do organisations do to try and pull out that type of feedback? And again, measuring your outcomes, tracking and monitoring and measuring is really important because you can't just take on face value some of the things that you think are all right. You've got to know that they're all right as well. I also like this this definition of quality governance. I mean, clinical governance has been around again for a very long time, and when it was first introduced as a concept, if you like, in the first class service, which I think was way back in the 1990s, there was quite, I thought, a complicated definition, and it really, I don't think, helped to engage practitioners in really understanding what clinical governance was all about. And everyone felt that, you know, that it was an add-on extra to the things that they were doing, and actually, quality governance is what should be in every organisation. Doesn't matter what type of organisation, you set up your systems and processes that will help you achieve a governance framework. And I think there are some key words in that definition. The culture of the organisation, as we've heard this morning, is really important, so that clinicians can talk about what their worries and concerns are. So to have clinicians and clinical teams to work at their best, everyone does, I believe, mostly come to work to do a good job, and have arrangements in place for measuring and monitoring quality, and most importantly, to be able to talk about it when they're worried or concerned. And also, one of the important things, which again I think sets the culture of the organisation, is to have an engaged board that considers quality and safety and patient experience and all those things as important as it does about the finances and the targets. This is just our example of what our trust governance structure looks like, and it's a bit complicated, but basically you've got the trust board at the top, you've got a number of committees underneath. It looks a bit bureaucratic, but I'm sure all organisations try and reduce and streamline, but never manage it. And all of the board subcommittees there are all chaired by a non-executive director to make sure that there are aspects of the governance structure that they are particularly interested in and engaged with. And then underneath, these are the committees that mainly the directors in the organisation chair. So I chair the Patient Issues Committee because that's about experience, and I chair the Patient Safety Committee, which as it is as it says. And then underneath, what we do need to try and do is, because that bit in a way is easy, it's easy to draw a governance structure that works sort of halfway up the organisation and up to the board, but it's what happens underneath and how do you get sort of the ward to board assurance channels really going, and how do you start embedding the systems and the processes within the divisions or your care groups or whatever structure you have. And structures are complicated. At the top, if you've got one individual sort of practitioner on a ward or in the community, they've then got their ward or their service, who are then divided into a care group, who are then divided into a directorate, who are then divided into a division, and then you've got the board, you've got the directors in between. So actually, we need to make sure that it's very easy for people to understand what the structures are, and I don't think necessarily we always do that, but I think that's a real challenge for us to go forward. There are loads of tools and techniques around in terms of how you can measure and monitor and call that sort of board to ward assurance. And this is our nursing scorecard that we've developed over the last year. I'm sure many of you have developed a similar system, and you've chosen to use different measures or indicators. And I think what's important is that you choose the indicators that you're most worried about, not whether they'll give you a red or a green. It really is important that you look at the information that's in your organisation and you track the things that you're most worried about, because what you do need is to have a composite picture of what's going on. We're in the process of refining it. The idea is obviously it's owned by the ward and the ward sister and the charge nurse. I think there's more work to do there because I'm not sure it's used as well as it could be. The matrons then collate it and give exception reports to me at the matrons meeting, and then then the divisional directors of nursing actually present a summary report at the nursing board on a monthly basis, just pulling out the key things that there may be, you know, key achievements and key concerns, that type of thing. So it's a tool that is being used, and it is a tool that really is, it's not about patting us all on the back. The idea really is for us to be alert to any flags or areas where we might be coming unstuck a little bit, or there might be a particular ward that looks like it's beginning to struggle, and so that we can sort of go in and nip things in the bud. It's one of the interests of one of our non-executive directors, and I haven't quite got my board paper right to his satisfaction. So, and that's the board-to-board accountability, the challenge by the non-executive directors of the executive at board level is really important. So we're doing this refinement, and I will be inviting him then to come and have a look at it so that he can see the changes that we've made, and then we can talk about what do I need to write in the report, what is he looking for that would give him the assurance that he's looking for. If it's 100% safety, I'm afraid I'll not be able to deliver that. But what's also important is that the areas where you've noted that you've got things to do, there are actions. You know, things have to precipitate an intervention. And, you know, our ward sisters and charge nurses tell me on a very regular basis that there are too many audits going on. And we do need to streamline it as much as possible. But I do always tell them that I do line it as much as possible. But I do always tell them that I do look at all of the audit results, and I really like to encourage the audits to be broken down to ward-based information, because it's very easy to dismiss a sort of a report that looks at the trust, and actually you can't identify where you are and whether you're good, bad and indifferent. So I think you have to give the wards the information that they need to take on board and then make their own corrective actions to, which may be different to the ward next door. I think Productive Ward has been for us a very good tool, again, that's helped to increase the amount of time available for nurses at the bedside. We've all heard that nursing is under scrutiny in terms of looking at the numbers, looking at what people are doing. So therefore, it's really important that the time they have is given as much to patient care and direct hands-on care than we can possibly make that. And we've been doing Productive Ward for a long time now. I think we sort of started way before I arrived in the organisation, but it's rolled out to all 44 wards. Now we're engaged with Productive Theatres and the Productive Community as well, because I think it's a really good series of tools and techniques, which is actually what a lot of all this is if you break it down. This in terms of, and I think one of the key things, and whilst, you know, it all feels very bad at the moment, I do feel that if you focus on things, you can achieve results. And I think one of the things that we sometimes forget to do is that we forget to celebrate our successes. And this was sort of St George's in quarter one, 06-07, when the targets and things first started coming out. Not very well placed in London, the worst, and not very well placed nationally, almost the worst. But as you can see, with the focus that's been sustained all the way through, we've had one MRSA bacteremia this year. And actually, a lot of people at the very beginning didn't believe it could happen, thought it was a nonsense target, and you know, patients were sick and infections were a sort of a natural complication of being poorly and coming into hospital. Well, actually, it isn't. And we can do a lot if we really put our minds to it and put a lot of effort into it as well. And I think this is, I use this as a sort of an illustration of trying not to necessarily sheep dip the organisation and being really insistent that everything is done one way and only one way. You can see these are all the wards where the distribution of the bacteremias were. And you can say that this was one of our ITUs where a lot of our bacteremias were. And in that year, they were sort of the mindset, they're really, really poorly, they've got lots of lines. They often come with the bacteremia, so it's not our fault anyway. All of that type of thing. And then there was an attitude change, a culture change. They stepped up and said, you know, I think we can do something about this. And by 2009-10, that was the number that they contributed to the total. So a lot of it is about trying to engage wards and services at that level. And I think sometimes it's also about really encouraging them to create their own safety dashboards, to look at the indicators. You know, then we will have some corporate ones, but there may be, you know, half a dozen indicators that they would really like to track on a regular basis, which are particular to their service, unique to them, will tell them whether or not they're doing a good job. And it's really, I think we need to do more of that to encourage that sort of granularity in terms of the ownership of the safety agenda. Line it as much as possible. But I do always tell them that I do look at all of the audit results, and I really like to encourage the audits to be broken down to ward-based information, education and training and regulation and all of those. But staff do matter, because happy staff do make happy patients, as Gail has just said. So you can put all your dashboards in, you can put all your systems in, but actually, unless you are recruiting safely and developing and inducting and orientating and appraising your staff, then the system is fairly useless, really. So it's not an either or, it is actually both. And we've talked a lot about, you know, skill mix and staffing ratios and things. We do monitor our staffing levels on a daily basis, and we can show over time, that which is the green line, that we've got better at managing our workforce in terms of trying to make everywhere as safe as it possibly can be. All of the wards have a sort of a set template and escalation procedures if they feel that they are heading for sort of unsafe territory. Now, quite often what does happen, which is always a bit of a tension, is that the ward that's green next door and has their staff on gets borrowed, and we've now got two amber wards rather than a red and a green. But that's safer across the board, and you just have to make those decisions. But it is important that we do track it, and that graph went in the quality report at the board a couple of months ago, because I think it's good assurance to know that we're doing this on a daily basis. And we talked about real-time patient experience in one of the previous presentations. We've used a survey system from a company for a while now, but actually we've got somebody who's very whizzy and technical in our organisation. And through charitable trust funds, he's developing our own system, which is much more responsive, and will give direct feedback to the staff. We're going to make it as simple as possible, and it's very, very much more flexible than the system that we used, so that we can change the questions very, very quickly, very easily, and we can translate them and do all sorts with them, which is really good. Patient experience, again, I think these types of graphs are very important to share with the staff, because you can see that over time things have changed. And again, it's that sort of mantra: if you put your mind to it and you focus on it, then you can make improvements in quality. And a lot of this stemmed from really just embedding it into business as usual. And I think I would say that when I arrived sort of at the beginning of last year, I think people were working really hard, but not everybody had accepted it as being an important issue. And actually, through everyone working together, I think we were really able to make a fantastic impact, which was translated through to the patient experience survey last year. I think it'd be just spend 30 seconds or so on my role as Director of Nursing, because it's very, very difficult sort of sitting, in the sort of the most senior position in the organisation. I can't know everything. And again, that's why systems and structures and processes and people, my leadership structure in the organisation that I work in, you know, there's a lot of discussion about how many layers do you have and what do they all do. But my view is that you create a structure that's fit for purpose and suits the organisation at the time. Over time, that may change, but actually it has to be more in context to what you're experiencing at the moment. So I do a quality report to the formal board, and that is split up into three sections: patient safety, patient experience, and patient outcomes. We've just introduced, I'm sure many of you have done this already, patient stories at the board, because the written word is never as powerful as a patient who comes to tell their story, tells what was good, but also what was not so good, how they were treated, how it felt to be cared for. So that's very early days for us, but they're working well. We've just got a new chair in the organisation, and I did the same with the last chair, monthly walk-arounds, just to make sure that we can engage with the staff, we can visit areas, we can talk about what's happening in their world. One of our non-executives is the nominated quality champion, and again, a very close working relationship with that person. And it's a bit like making sure that, you know, he's very well briefed on some of the quality issues and some of the concerns, which helps the debate at the board much better. And also every Friday morning, I do try and get out and about in uniform to really visit and talk to the staff, talk to patients, just generally to try and make sure I can keep dipping into the clinical areas so that I feel more confident as to what I'm talking out at the board. Some very key simple messages to finish with. And learnt over bitter experience, mostly when things have not gone well. But that, as the minister did say, that is when you actually do learn the most, because, you know, you never want to put yourself or the organisation through that again. And actually, you can get a lot of things done that you might have been trying to do for a very long time. So do use it as leverage as well. But don't be complacent and never stop looking. I think external assurance is one component of assurance. The Danny report that St George's has, we were compliant on both of those standards, but that didn't lead me to disestablish the nutrition strategy group or anything like that, because I do believe that we've got, you know, things to do and things to continue to improve. I think take action. There's nothing more dispiriting for people who spend their time doing these audits and sending their results off if nothing happens to them. Close the accountability loop. I write to the ward sisters and the charge nurses to say that audit result was good, well done, keep it going, or it wasn't so good, what are you going to do to improve it? And as I said, use the context to lever of change. I think the sequins are very good in terms of determining some local quality improvements that gives a little bit more emphasis in the organisation because there's money attached. So use the context to make sure that quality improvement remains on the agenda. You can't do everything. You need to choose the things that you are the most important things to you. What we said before about being open when things go wrong, it's not very easy having conversations with families where you know mistakes have happened, but actually they feel far, far worse than you do. So it's really important to pick up the phone and keep the dialogue going. Learn lessons. So read the reports of the investigations by the CQC in other organisations. Be reflective and honest. Can that happen to you? If so, what might you do? What might you need to do to try and prevent it from happening? And I think clinical audit teams are often the unsung heroes on the quality agenda. Ours are fabulous, and they do a wonderful job in telling us where we need to look and where we need to improve. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from PolicyReview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.